Welcome to the Living Waters Church podcast.
All right, we are in the middle of the Ask Anything series, and we have 2 weeks left of that, this week and next week. And then we move into a new series called Bad Apples. So we're going into the season of Lent, which precedes Easter. So Lent is a build-up to Easter. And during that season, we're going to be in this series called Bad Apples, which is camping in Matthew 23. And Matthew 23 is a bunch of sayings from Jesus, which are known as the woes to the Pharisees, where Jesus basically calls out and condemns some of the religious leaders of his day for how they are living. And so we're going to look at what he said, why he said it, and what his way is in opposition to their way, and reflect on where we're coming from in our relationship with God as we move towards Easter so we can celebrate that really well. So that's where we're headed in a few weeks. Want to let you know about that. If you want to learn more about Lent, we're going to be posting about that this week on our website. So if you're interested in discovering more about it, that's going to be available for you probably on Tuesday. But today, yeah, we're in the Ask Anything series still. And the question that we are looking at this morning, and by this morning I mean this evening, is two more cuts of coffee probably would have done the trick. How do we break out of a cookie cutter mold of Christianity and truly make an impact? So this question was chosen. It was thought up by somebody in our community, and then you voted on it online. I think this is a really good question because it expresses some heart and expresses some attitude. It's got a bit of authenticity to it and almost a little bit of discontentment, which I think is positive. Because we do say all the time here that we value authenticity, right? And we say that we value expression. So the fact that someone felt comfortable to ask it and then we as a community voted on it, I think is a good thing. But I'll be honest, when the first question first arose, I didn't think it had a hope. And sorry if you asked the question, if you're here, if you wrote that down on a piece of paper and put it in the bag. But usually questions that get in for this series are really specific. So we've already talked about the will of God. We've looked at demonology. Last week, we asked a question about women in church leadership. Very specific questions tend to get in. And this question is really broad and kind of relative. And so when it came up, I didn't think it would have much of a chance, but it got voted in. And I think that it's a positive thing because it tells us something about our community. It tells us that we're not just interested in knowing things. That we're also interested in doing things. That it's not just about what we're getting up here, but we know that the walk of faith together in community has to bear some kind of fruit. And so there's this element of almost this, a little bit of angsty question that has risen up amongst us going, but what about impact? What about the world? What should we be doing there? So I think it's a positive sign for our community. Before we go into it, though, we want to just almost interpret the question, because as we said, it is quite broad and in a way a bit relative. So I want us to look at a couple of things about it that we can observe from the question. The first is that this is a how question. It's not a why or a what, but we're talking about action steps today. How shall we live? We're talking about steps forward. And as we said, it appears to betray a sense of discontentment towards what it calls cookie cutter Christianity. We might see a lot of these tonight. Cookie cutter Christianity, wishing to break away from what feels like a boxy kind of existence and do something meaningful in the world. So it implies that there is a kind of Christian-esque existence that is normal, produced, unoriginal, uncreative, uninspired. But most of all, it's a kind of existence that is irrelevant, that doesn't make an impact. And that's the second part of the question. And so if such a faith actually does exist, something that's lackluster or feeling empty, a fruitless kind of rule following, how do we break out of it? The question is asking. And there's this sense of angst, as we said, like, oh, there's got to be more to this Christian thing. There's got to be more to life, more than Christian subculture, more than sort of a stale observance to what we claim to believe, but are a little bit worried sometimes that maybe we don't fully because we don't always see the fruit in our lives through it. And so the question forces us to confront a fundamental Christian truth, which says when you encounter Jesus, you will encounter change. You will encounter transformation, that you will make an impact. And so if you're not making an impact, what does that say about your relationship with God? I didn't ask the question. Somebody else did. We're just discussing it tonight. But it's intense and it's challenging. I'm glad it was asked. So in unpacking this question, we're going to be in the book of Hebrews tonight. So if you have your Bibles, you can open up to Hebrews chapter 10. And as you do that, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Hebrews if you don't know a lot about it. So Hebrews is a letter that was written to Christians who were in danger of reverting back to an old way of living that didn't celebrate and center on Jesus. And so the writer of Hebrews was concerned that these new Christians would basically forget how important Jesus is and what he'd done for humanity. They're concerned that people will begin to trust in their own ability to do things, to be good enough and please God that way, rather than live in a genuine relationship with Jesus. So the writer hopes, beyond all hope, that the people that he's writing to will experience Jesus in his fullness. So it's written in that way, saying there was an old way, but Jesus has given us the new way. And we need to walk in that together so that we see transformation in our lives and then ultimately in the lives of the people around us. So this old way of living that the Hebrews were being warned about falling back into was, in fact, Judaism at the time, which didn't put any stock in Jesus or in what he did. It continued to put stock in the Jewish law, which came before Jesus and was a positive thing given by God in preparation for Jesus. But when Jesus came on the scene, he was the best, most fullest revelation, special revelation of God. And because we have Jesus, we no longer need the law. Now, as we look at this passage, I want to make it really clear that the cookie cutter Christianity, however we'd like to define that, and the law are not the same thing. They're not exactly the same thing. But I do think that the exhortation and encouragement that we have at the end of Hebrews will actually still be helpful for us, because the cookie cutter Christianity and the law do have one thing in common. They're seemingly missing the impact of Jesus. They're missing the power, and they're lacking fruit, and so perhaps they need to be broken free from. Because as we said before, if there's no fruit, no change, no transformation, no life, no love, perhaps there is no Jesus, or not enough Jesus. Whatever is devoid of transformation and ultimately fruit may be devoid of Christ. And so I would argue that if this question matters to us, if you're someone sitting there going, yeah, I want to see my life do something, and I voted for the question, or I'm interested in the question, I would argue that if we're ever feeling uninspired, if we're ever feeling unfruitful, like we're missing the point, like we're not making an impact, that the exhortation towards the end of Hebrews will be really helpful for us today. So the first 10 chapters of Hebrews is all about how great Jesus is. And the writer paints this beautiful, glorious picture of Jesus. Jesus is better than the angels. Jesus is better than Moses. Jesus has got it going on. And he came so that we could be brought close to God. Before, the law was there and we need to walk through certain steps, and there was a distance and there was a slight connection, but not much. Jesus brings us close to God. That's the first 10 chapters of Hebrews in a nutshell. And then he continues and shifts gears and says, because we are close to Jesus, because we have the opportunity to draw close to him, let's do that. Let's embrace what Jesus has given us and draw close to God. And then let's do this. Here are some action steps. This is what life should look like as a Christian, as someone who's been brought close to God. It says this in verse 23, Hebrews 10. Let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, for God can be trusted to keep his promise. Let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. And let us not neglect our meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of his return is drawing near. So it begins with saying, let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, for God can be trusted to keep his promise. We see in the scriptures quite clearly that man is an incredibly forgetful creature. The book of Exodus, and many of us know this story, but a little recap is an interesting one to me, where you have the people of Israel living in captivity and bondage under Pharaoh. And they are not happy about that because they're slaves. And they have to work, and it's difficult, and they don't have their freedom. So they cry out to God, and God sends Moses to bring them deliverance. And Moses, you know, you remember the story, goes to Pharaoh and says, let the people go, or God's going to bring the pain. And Pharaoh goes, no. And Moses says, okay, here comes the pain. And the pain comes, the pain being plagues. Let's just define that. And then the worst plague is that the fact that the firstborn of everybody in the land dies who isn't under the blood of the lamb. And you remember that story. So finally it gets so bad in Egypt that Pharaoh's like, you know what, just you're not worth the hassle. And so Moses leads the people out of Egypt and they come to the sea, right? And Moses goes, this is a problem. We got to get through this. And God divides the sea and the people of Israel, millions of them, walk through. They get to the other side. Pharaoh's army decides, you know what, I think that I want my slaves back. So he sends the army after them. They rush into the sea after them. God makes the sea go in on them, destroying Pharaoh's army, and the children of Israel are on the other side, finally completely and utterly emancipated, totally free. There they are. And then they begin their trek towards what is supposed to be the promised land for them. But things don't always go exactly as they thought they would, and they begin to struggle with some stuff. And about a month into their wandering, they begin to complain. And they begin to sound like teenagers on a road trip with their parents that they don't want to be on, right? They start to run out of food. They don't really see a lot of water all the time. They go, oh, this is the worst ever. What are we doing out here, Moses? And at one point they go, it would be better for us to be back in Egypt when we were slaves and getting whipped and building bricks. At least there we had some food. And they forgot what happened like a month before, where God had completely and utterly freed them from hundreds of years of slavery and bondage and literally divided a sea and allowed them to walk through it. And we see this sort of all through the scriptures. We see it in the book of Judges. We see it in the stories about the kings of Israel and Judah. We see it in the Psalms with David. We see it in the New Testament where Jesus' disciples are fickle and they're unbelieving. We see it in the rest of the New Testament, in the writings of how easy it is as for us as humans to forget what God has done, to forget his promises and who he is. And so the writer of Hebrews says, now that you know about Jesus, now that you're close to Jesus, don't forget what he's done. Don't forget the truth about him. Don't live in unthankfulness. Hold on to the hope that we have in Christ to be able to trust in God. So what does all this have to do with making an impact? Breaking free from a fruitless way of living? We've got a tendency sometimes, as the people of God, looking back on our history, to think that if we just had more food, if we just had a king, if we just ran things the way that those people did over there, then we'd be better off. If we just had a bit more flash and dash, if we just had a new idea, then we would be better off and make some kind of an impact. But the beginning of a fruitful life in God starts with walking with him deeply, consistently, and daily trusting him. And it begins in a oneness that we can have with God. It begins, as the Hebrews writer says, being close to God and remembering what he has done for us. A lot of Christianity is about simply remembering. And this flows from what God has done historically with the Jewish people. Remember the laws of the Lord. Bind them on your wrists and on your forehead so you do not forget them. What is true about God? Hold on to that because we will easily forget. A lot of what we do, even in a church gathering like this, is about remembering. That's why we sing, to remind ourselves. One of the reasons we sing, to remind ourselves of who God is and why he matters and who we are and what he's done for us. It's why we receive communion, why Jesus said, remember me through this. Remembering is a huge part of it. And the Hebrews writer knows that. So he says, remember. So, do we want to make an impact? Do we want to see transformation and change in the world? I would argue that we must first be deeply and consistently impacted ourselves through remembrance. And that means knowing God. And knowing God means trusting God and holding on tightly without wavering. We don't have a great history of doing that, but the writer of the Hebrews doesn't care. He says, you can do it. Hold on. Go for it. Often we're so concerned with seeing the effects of our belief rather than developing the relationship with God that he calls us to and just naturally seeing what comes out of that. What's the stuff, God? What are you going to do through me? What are all the things that are going to happen? Or rather than God saying, just come close, remember the simple truths, cultivate that relationship, and see what flows from it. Verse 24, he moves on with that foundation and writes, let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. So this believing, this holding to the truth, the writer encourages, says it has outcomes. There's a natural flow. It should bear fruit. And that is love and good works. This word motivate is an interesting one because it had been used at that time mostly in a negative sense. It's sometimes translated provoke. And so some believe that at that time, the church had a tendency, and people in general had a tendency, to provoke each other negatively, to stir up conflict, to escalate issues within their gatherings, generally just be meanies for the most part. But the author of the Hebrews, perhaps, uses this word in a positive light to say provoke, but provoke to good things. Push each other's buttons, but in a way that pushes you forward in God so that good things are happening in your life, pushing each other forward and bearing fruit. Don't waste your time picking fights, essentially. So again, do we want to make a difference? Do we want to break out of what feels stale and boring? I would say get around people who challenge you, people who aren't interested in letting you sit on the sidelines. And if you're surrounded by inspiring people, you'll likely do something inspirational and things will flow from that. As I wrestled with this passage, I wanted to ask, and it bugged me a little bit, I wanted to know, what are the love and good works? Like, what should we be doing? Like, what's the actual stuff? What's interesting about this verse and some of the passages in Hebrews is that, especially in relationship to this question, the writer doesn't seem too concerned with giving explicit instruction on what love and good works are exactly. We might still ask, it would be good to have an idea of what that's supposed to look like. What should impact be? What do you think it should be? That's what I'd put back to that question. You have God's Spirit in you. You can hear from God. You don't need someone telling you every week, day by day, this is how to act. That's not freedom. It's not life with Jesus. That's the law. That's legalism. That's setting up something where somebody else tells you how to live and you have to walk in step with that. That's not oneness with Jesus. So maybe part of breaking out of what feels cookie cutter is realizing that we are released to run with what God is doing within us, both individually and communally. Maybe we're waiting around sometimes for instruction when all we need to do is exactly what the writer of Hebrews tells us to: draw close to God, draw close to each other, know him deeply, and listen to what he has for us to do. You are far more inspiring, creative, and gifted than you think you are. And I don't want to get all Tony Robbins here. And I don't have a book for sale at the back, but the scriptures call you God's child, calls you his workmanship, his masterpiece. So he's up to something in you and he's up to something in the people around you. Listen to that, consider that, and move forward in what you think he's calling you in. Continues on in verse 25. and says this: "Let us not neglect our meeting together as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of his return is drawing near." The recipients of Hebrews at the time were tempted to not gather anymore as the church because they were under a lot of persecution. It was difficult to be a Christian at that time in their particular context. And so they were worried about getting together and they wanted to blend in with society. I would argue that we don't necessarily struggle with that kind of intense persecution in that manner, but perhaps there are lots of other reasons that we don't necessarily come together. And so the exhortation in Hebrews here to stick together is there for a reason, and we need to listen to it. So if the previous verse didn't paint a clear enough picture, you can't follow Jesus and make an impact on the world all by yourself. It doesn't really work like that. I sometimes hear a discontent and a disappointment with the church, especially from people within my generation. And some people have decided that the church is irrelevant and stale and out of touch and isn't really making any difference. And they think they're better off going alone. They choose to distance themselves from religion in general, organized religion. They're cool with Jesus for the most part, but not his body. They'll bear with it. They'll keep it at arm's distance. They may even attend church, but the barrier is always up. There's always this, "I don't really know about those people," or "that group of people or organization." There's a wall there. They'll bear with it, but Hebrews argues against that. There's also a nasty little pastime within the church where we've learned to engage in something over the years, and we learn to engage in beating ourselves up a lot through negative words, backbiting, a lack of unity, and commitment to itself. The church weakens itself, and it's counterproductive to our work in the world and our purpose. And by church, I don't mean Living Water specifically necessarily. I mean the church universal, the bride of Christ, the group of people that Jesus gave his life for. The church isn't perfect. News flash. The people of God never, ever have been. They've been on the way. They're being transformed into the likeness of God. A friend of mine over the holidays when we were hanging out quoted Augustine when we were talking about this kind of stuff. And he said, "You know, Augustine wrote that the church is a whore, but she is my mother." Which is kind of intense. Now you're listening. Church is a whore, but she is my mother. The church is wayward. We have a tendency to wander. We have a tendency to screw up, but this is where we are born. This is where we find new life amongst each other. And when we engage in chatter and how about the church isn't effective, how it's irrelevant, how it isn't doing anything, we're only contributing to the problems. When we passively sit on the sideline, unwilling to give things a shot, we're shortchanging ourselves and we're shortchanging the greater community expressed through Jesus more fully. And we're not talking here about positive discussion or constructive criticism. Those are positive things. And there are issues within the church, absolutely, that we need to look at and work on together. But when it comes to all of the negative stuff, all of the distancing, all of the "I don't know about that," it's not helpful. And the writer of Hebrews says, stick close together. The church is the body of Christ. It's one with him. And if the church is totally irrelevant, ineffective, and isn't making an impact, then what are we saying about Jesus? Jesus is restoring and redeeming and transforming people, cultures, nations, entire regions around the world day after day. And he's been doing so for millennia. But he's been doing so through his church, through his body. So the writer of Hebrews exhorts, don't give up on each other. Don't give up on each other. Encourage one another. Stick together. If the first major historical struggle of the people of God is being faithful to God, the second major struggle has been being faithful to each other. We're so easy to turn away from God and so easy to want to isolate ourselves again in sin and in bondage rather than letting the walls come down and living in genuine community. So, again, do we want to make an impact? Hebrews would lead us to believe to commit to Jesus and commit to his church. Commit to genuine community and authenticity in your life. Resist the urge to segregate yourself, to pull away and go it alone. Commit to and dedicate yourself to learning, growing, being shaped by the people around you in your Christian community, wherever that may be. Commit to making community look like it should and not a farce. John 13:35, Jesus writes, "They will know you are my followers by your love for each other." And if the church is devoid of love for itself, it will be devoid of love for the outsider who's supposed to be invited into it. And there won't be any impact then. So maybe breaking free from the, again, bunny ears here, cookie cutter mold means committing more deeply to the dough. As cheesy as that might sound, give it to me. And since we're all together here, and since Hebrews says that this should be a gathering of encouragement and exhortation, I want to share a little bit about what goes on around here, people that you might not even know. When I look at this expression of Christ's body, this particular church, I don't see a bunch of normal, produced, uninspiring people. I don't see cookie-cutter Christians, if I'm honest with you. I see the Victoria Wilkinsons and Courtney Kennedys of us. Two young women under the age of 25 who have pioneered incredibly brilliant, resourceful, inspiring ideas and programs. Victoria is pioneering something called the Princess Pillowcase Project. There's a lot of P's in there, and it helps you remember it. And she is gathering these pillowcases, used pillowcases, from all kinds of people in our community, from this church and in the neighborhoods and schools and stuff, and saying, what we're going to do is we're going to take these pillowcases and we're going to turn them into dresses, and then we're going to send them to Africa. And they're doing 300 of those this year, which is incredible and ingenious. And Victoria's like, what, 20? Courtney Kennedy oversees the Peter Pran Project. More peas. I don't know. There's something going on there. And this is a project that gathers used books from our community, from our churches, and then takes these used books to inner city schools and gives them to kids that don't have any. And that's happening right now. I see the Todd Hotmans amongst us. Todd's a guy who's leading the charge in our community in Langley and Vancouver and pressing us to join the fight against the scourge of human trafficking. You can't have a 10-minute conversation with Todd without him talking about human trafficking. It's really annoying. Constantly. Todd, how's it going? Good, man. Yeah, things are great. Did you know this goes on like in our city? Okay, Todd, enough with the... He provokes me. He provokes us. He reminds us that there's something to do. I see our volunteers at the Gateway of Hope. I see people opening their homes through life groups and other such things week in and week out to care for each other, love each other, support each other, even give money to each other when they need it. I see families in our church who are scattered even amongst us tonight, and you wouldn't even know it, who adopt and foster. People who have literally opened their homes their whole lives to the orphan, the abandoned, the neglected, the abused. I see students amongst us figuring out and learning for the first time that family does not have to be dysfunctional and broken, that family can be found in a prayer in a dorm room, or a conversation with a professor, or a shoulder to cry on from a classmate who happens to be there and also be a Christian. I see people, you people, day in and day out, going to your workplaces and your schools, genuinely trying to live righteously and follow Jesus well, loving people that are difficult to love. You know those people, right? There's people that are tough to love, but every day you try and bring the essence of Christ to where you are going. Every single day. I see moms and dads and caregivers who are giving everything they've got to raise kids who will be able to continue in the way of Jesus long after we're gone. I see single moms giving time, energy, even money and love to serving others when they've probably got far less of all those things than we have. And yet they pour themselves out and they give. I see teenagers from our youth ministry, showcasing their faith, and it's fresh and young and raw and most of the time smelly. But they're in their high schools And they don't know a lot, but they know enough to know that they have got something that perhaps the other kids don't have. And they're able to just invite these kids to the youth ministry, to the things that go on around here and in youth ministries around in this community. And say, do you want to come to this thing? And I've seen kid after kid after kid after kid rescued from a completely hopeless trajectory. Because a 15-year-old said, hey, you don't seem to have a lot of friends. Do you want to come and meet some of mine? Beautiful. I see 90-year-olds encouraging 25-year-olds and 25-year-olds praying with 90-year-olds. I see a church that is financially supporting 12 projects and people around the world, making a dramatic difference in Africa, Asia, Europe, Vancouver, Central America, Siberia. That's the weird one for me. Siberia. Like, we send money to the Pankovs, who've been in Siberia for 4 years, and they live there in almost complete seclusion, ministering to a bunch of people that have never heard the name of Jesus before. Siberia. Like, where's Siberia? It's the middle of nowhere is where it is, and yet we're involved there through our community, through being together. I see a church, as we saw tonight, giving people literal water that didn't have any before. And as grainy as that video was and as cheesy as the music was in the background, that was flippin' inspiring to go, wow, 400 people have water now because we gave. And so I don't see a bunch of cookie cutter Christians in front of me. And I don't say any of this to bolster your ego or mine or to say that our church is the greatest church ever, because we've got our problems just like everybody else does. I say this to provoke you to do more, to encourage you to do more, to keep going, and to inspire you to keep doing what's unexpected, shocking, beautiful, and good. I was thinking at the end of tonight that it'd be good to give everybody a stir stick. And as you leave, you could poke each other and go, just keep going. You're doing well. Then I thought, Luke, that's weird and probably annoying and certainly environmentally unfriendly. So that's not the kind of impact that we want to make necessarily. But tonight, be reminded that you are on a good trajectory. Be encouraged to keep going. There isn't a new and flashy way. There isn't. There is the ancient, beautiful way of Jesus, in which you have an incredible heritage. Hebrews goes on later to say that because these incredible people have gone on before you, because of the history of the success of God's people, not just the failures, be encouraged by that and be encouraged by the people that are around you and keep going. You've been surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses. Look at that and be inspired in where you come from and where you can go. So the word today is keep going. Have we got it all together? No. Are we on the right path? Absolutely. Let's keep going that direction.